You're listening to the Artist First World Radio Network, artistfirst.com. Tony K in the studio. Thanks, audience, for joining us worldwide. All broadcasts available free on demand at the website artistfirst.com. Be sure to check our homepage out regularly for updated guests and featured specials. Be sure to thank all of your Facebook friends for joining us at Authors First and for spreading the word about the quality authors we have on every day. This hour on Authors First, my privilege to introduce H.J. Courtwright. And I'll spell that for you, H.J. C-O-U-R-T-R-I-G-H-T, right. Courtwright joining us to discuss his latest of five books, Jennifer, which actually will appear in a series. It's book one of the Ring of Fire series. Let's give a warm Artist First welcome to our guest. How do you do, Harold?
Fine. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. You were on previously, and I'm so glad that you came back to visit Artist First Radio and Authors First in particular. So many of our authors see the value in communicating directly with a worldwide audience about what's been happening in their life, and writing can be a solitary effort until you begin to see recognition. And you've been recognized all over the World Wide Web. Congratulations on your very unique approach to various genres of material that are engaging and very much, I think, tune with the spiritual side of humanity, perhaps beckoning back to your shamanic American Indian experiences and love of that practice, early Celtic religions and so forth. And I think that every author brings with them that backdrop of the inner essence, and then how can I paint portraits of people and circumstances that will guide the reader in some deeper spiritual meaning. Soaring Eagle, Spirit of the Wind, your style of your earlier books, the familiar, and now with a new series that you're introducing to the world in the Ring of Fire series. I love that, Ring of Fire. I don't know why. I think immediately of the Ring of Fire. So, you know, the song, but it is very much a circle of life and sphere of influence. And you have taken, some deeply held philosophical, views of humanity and the world and brought them to bear in your books and in your series. Harold, thank you so much. H.J. Courtwright, the guest. For your convenience, look at artistfirst.com, and you'll see the link right there with our guest, and you can follow it, go right over and learn more. Just don't click on anything audio while you're listening to the show. And thank you for joining us on YouTube and TuneIn's and iTunes and all over the World Wide Web. It's great to have you on board, audience. Harold, you have a prolific way of putting together material, and in creating a series, did you know in advance how many books you intended the Ring of Fire to span?
Well, no, not really. It just kind of migrated into three books. I started with the concept of Jennifer, and then I had a couple other characters in the story that really needed more explanation, and they really had a story of their own. And that's what brought on the other two books, the ideas for the other two books.
Yeah, sometimes a character or a theme becomes so overpowering. Is that the right way? And then you want to keep on with it, and that generated book two and three in that Ring of Fire series?
Well, one book just wasn't long enough. Well, it would have been too long, actually, to incorporate the other two stories. So it's just, they're more like spinoffs. But they're the characters that are in this book. Jennifer's the first one, of course. The next one I plan is Delilah, which is a character in this book. And then the third is going to be Jennifer's mother's Desiree, but it really takes place before this book starts. So it's kind of a prequel, if you will.
And the three obviously then are connected, and so the theme of the series remains intact.
Right, and it's a fiery experience, you might say.
Yeah, I mean, there's a love affair with weapons, I take it.
Yeah, when it comes to Jennifer, yeah.
Yeah.
This is 5 days in her life. Sometime before, she was given a 38 caliber pistol by her uncle. And she periodically goes to the firing range to let off steam. And she starts off, she's very emotionally, psychologically troubled by some past events. And that's where this book starts. And in the next 5 days, you can see how it just gets, her anxieties increase and so on and so forth until everything just comes to a head, the last few chapters.
Power in the wrong hand. Power in the wrong hand, right? Are you pointing out themes where we really need better psychological testing or before we issue arms? Is it that type of a statement?
No. It's more of a statement on her sanity, actually. And I was going to say a second ago that the pistol is actually a character in the story. It's not just a pistol.
Wow.
At some point, she imagines that it talks to her. And it taunts her to do something that's contrary to what she believes. And that builds throughout the story.
Yeah, so I think they make a pill for that, right?
Well, I think they try to, yeah.
Now, Jennifer then has a circle of friends and influences, right?
Yes.
So anyone else observing this emotionally, psychologically movement away from sanity?
Well, other people see it, but they don't understand how powerful it is. They know there's something wrong. They know she has a problem, but I get into her head, and you really understand how powerful this message is coming from the gun. As odd as that sounds.
Yeah, I mean, that is not an uncommon, though. It's in the realm of reality in the sense that it wouldn't be the first time someone has acted because of a little voice speaking in their head, whether it's coming from an inanimate object or another personality they think that exists.
Right, exactly. And that's what I was trying to build on. When I created this.
What fun, I guess.
Oh yeah, I had to go back and redo things quite a few times because I had to build it on layers. There's an interaction between Jennifer, husband Sam, her father Jack, and the other characters, and they all have interactions between one another. So it's virtually impossible to sit down and write it start to finish. You have to do it in layers. Do some of Jenny and how she reacts and interacts with a couple of the other characters. Then you have to do another character and how that character interacts within the story. And you have to build it on layers, and then you go through several times after that for purposes of continuity. And it's a very long process, actually.
Yeah, and to keep it straight, you know, as you said, then later, certain things you've chiseled out in the first book have to be consistent in books two and three.
No, exactly, exactly.
So be careful what you wish for.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, but you know, unless you totally work yourself against a wall, you know, there's ways you can get around it generally. You know, even if you do make a mistake here and there, you know, you can usually fix it.
Why do we like Jennifer? I mean, we know she's, you know, has issues, but.
Well, I tried to make her as familiar to the average person as I could. Even though she is troubled, I give her a lot of normal characteristics that make her normal, that the reader can empathize with, and we care about what happens to her. And that's more important than anything else, actually. You have to care about the character that's in the story.
Yeah, the friend who needs our help.
Exactly.
The empathy,
exactly.
Right? The, oh, no, don't make that decision.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
yeah,
like
yeah,
yeah. You know what's behind the door. And you got door A, door B, door
yeah.
C. We know what's behind the door, but she's yeah. going to pick
or,
the she's
yeah,
going to make the wrong
choice. Don't turn
choice,
that
huh?
light on.
Yeah, because it can be explosive, and that's what happens with these characters. They're believable, they're credible, and that's why you're a great author. You've really tapped into something. It's a different way of approaching a book. Many authors, everything just flows in continuity. But the way that you've crafted and assembled, it's really like a puzzle that you've put together, those layers, it has multiple levels. Let's just say that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, nothing's more boring than the story that is so predictable that, you know, it's what's going to happen before you even get to page 10. You know, it's just like nobody wants to read that. So you have to find ways of making it interesting. And make it interesting is making it like real life. Real life isn't straightforward from start to finish. So, you know, you've got to think of those things. And that's kind of how I designed some of it, you know. Part of it is you have to observe what goes on day to day with people that you know, people that you don't know, people that you just encounter. And you have to stop and think, well, why did that person just do that? And you think in your mind, well, maybe because of this or that. And make a few notes and just go on, you know. And basically it's the culmination of, you know, human observation, I guess.
Well, we know what's in the briefcase. It's a .38 caliber Smith & Wesson. But why does she carry or need or use a briefcase at all? Why not a purse? Why not a body pistol, right? I mean, why the briefcase?
Well, the briefcase is part of her. It's part of her daily life. She's a contracts person, and she deals with the general public, and she draws up contracts and so on and so forth. And that type of person, that type of business person, has a briefcase.
And yeah, that's just, right. It'd be an attorney or some other assistant or an accountant. What jobs, right? What circles would a person who requires a briefcase to do the type of work she does, where would they run? Who would they be with?
Right, and it's all part of her character.
So oh, yeah.
It just kind of fell in naturally. It wouldn't make sense if it was a purse because that would make her more of a, say, administrative assistant, say. It wouldn't make her...
carrying anything of significance. These are documents of significance, of legal import. People's lives are on the line.
And that also gives importance to the gun. You know, it's a kind of a symbolic importance, but it kind of adds to it, too.
So piece by piece, we're building an understanding of who Jennifer is, her world, the people she associates with, the reason why she would have a briefcase and a gun in it. And we're getting an image. Now, in terms of her dress code, are we privy to that, or is that left to our imagination?
Mostly to your imagination, but generally it's business type, you know. I really didn't get into that terribly much. I don't know if that's good or bad. Some people just thrive on that kind of thing. But there's just certain aspects in the way I tell a story that I like some of it to be left to the imagination, because that makes it even more alive.
I think so. You know, if you get too distinctive about the way that she would dress, then there would need to be a connected dot later on, right?
That would be a clue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you run up to against the problem of what kind of significance does it have to the story? If she only wears a certain color scarf, well, you know, in everyday life that doesn't matter. But in fiction, it has to have some sort of purpose.
Yes, that was her. That's how she strangled people, or you know,
whatever. Yeah, whatever. You know, it has to have some kind of purpose. So that everyday life doesn't work that way. So if you get too deep into certain descriptions, it kind of takes away. You know, the reader expects more later on, and more really isn't there in that particular case.
And that's all right. I got the image real quick. HJCourtwright.com, the website, author of Jennifer, the first in the Ring of Fire series, and your fifth book. Congratulations, and thank you for supporting the arts on Authors First. Tony Kaye in the studio, thanks for joining us. Visit the website and buy the books. They're quality materials, and as you've heard me say, if you find a good book, buy 10 and bless as many people as you can. Get into libraries, teachers' hands, your friends. Leave one laying around for others to read. Certainly enjoy them yourself. Great books, quality prices. I love the artwork, Harold, that you've done. Is this something that you've dabbled in developing the website, or have you had some assistance?
I had someone do this cover for me. What I wanted to do, I just didn't have enough art background to do it. So I enlisted someone else to take care of that for me in this particular case. Most of the other covers I do myself, but this one I had somebody else do.
Congratulations. They're very well done. And
thank you.
They really do hone in on the topic and add that extra polish. You know, you've got to have it. You can have great work inside, but if you don't have an appealing curb appeal cover, you're not going to get far, you know, because we're just so visual. Even the e-books, you would say, oh, well they want to see a book trailer then, you know. I'm sure that'll be something you'll work on, or have someone work on for you, the book trailers.
It's available online. There's an ebook with Amazon right now, I have print copies, but I sell the print copies myself, and they're available on my website too.
Oh, okay. Very nice. Very nice. That explains why they're affordable, Tony Kaye. Good job. Good job. And I love it when authors do that. I think it invites more readers and gives people a chance at a nice price to experience an author for the first time. And typically that's what happens. You know, once they read one, then the rest begin to tumble.
Yeah. Well, ebooks are the thing now. It makes reading much more portable. And you can carry an entire library in the palm of your hand. You know, it's just incredible what they do now. And that makes it more saleable device. So, you know, every little bit helps.
Your style of writing, the things that you choose to incorporate in your books, have an element of historical fact and an element of the imagination.
Yeah, I never thought of it quite that way, but yeah, that's true.
And so you have this grounding effect of believability. Historically, oh, there it is, you know, like brick and mortar. And then you have this other world floating around that's in Jennifer's head.
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, we all have that at some point. Sometimes we don't always act on it, but it's always there in the back, churning away, doing something. And that's kind of like what I like to feed on next. Because everyone has thoughts that are contrary to what they believe or how they act, or you know, you always think of something off the wall. You don't act on it, of course, but everybody has those thoughts, and I like to try and incorporate that. In this particular case, she goes a little bit too far, but that's what makes it fiction. So.
Yeah, well, we don't want to give away the story, the punchline, audience. You'll have to read the book. Come on. You'll want to get your copy of Jennifer and find out what are we talking about, and you'll be fascinated by it. Now, are there opportunities to sample a chapter or a page, or what are you doing now for readers?
Well, excuse me. You can go online to the Amazon site, and you can click on the cover, and you can get some sample. It'll give you the first chapter, I believe. And you can sample it that way. On my website, on the one page, there's a link for a blog. And that's also, that's actually the first several chapters. And if someone wanted to look at that and get an idea what the story was about.
Well, I'm counting six books on Amazon. Or is the Art Bulletin, volume 78, that was a published paper?
No,
not you.
That's a different court, right?
Okay. Wrong. Well, they have it with you there, but that's okay.
Yeah, they have me.
I see Blood, Sweat, and Terror. That's you, right? Soaring Eagle, Spirit of the Wind. That's a great book.
Me.
That's cool. The Familiar. That's, wow. Boy, you're just getting like 5-star reviews all the way down here. Congratulations. Readers are enjoying it. And as you stated, that Kindle edition, $3.99. Why wouldn't you buy 10 of them?
Yeah, there you go.
Spend 40 bucks and just start sending it out, you know, for Christmas. Gee. Okay, I love that. Very nice web. Hey, now I just missed it all together. Partially colorblind, Tony Kaye with H.J. Courtright looking at the book cover Jennifer, as available at Amazon.com. There it is. It looks like you've decided that she's either a blonde or a redhead.
Yeah, it's actually a blonde. It doesn't translate very well.
Well, that's all right. You know, we like the redheads too.
That cover. When I came across this cover, I had originally set up Jennifer as being a blonde, and doing the gun and the whole thing. And when I came across this cover, I said, "That's her." I didn't have to make any changes to it at all. It was perfect.
Yeah, I mean, because the one eye that's really pronounced there is target on. I mean, you know, that's staring you down. I mean, it has all of the right elements. It's a beautiful cover. Congratulations. 330 pages.
Yeah,
that's You know, I mean, that's no little book. That's why you said you couldn't put all three in one. It'd be, you know, 1,000 pages long.
Yeah, it's approximately 100,000 words.
Very nice. Very nice. And I think that's the way to go today. It's because of the mobile devices, the Androids, the tablets, all of the easy way, the television, you know, come on, the smart TVs. Everyone has a way of accessing a quality book and storing it and keeping it and enjoying it and coming back to it.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess at this point there's no turning back, but why would you, you know?
No, it's a long time coming. We began Artist First Radio in 1997, and we're celebrating our 20th year. We've had thousands of guests from every walk of life, famous personalities in the entertainment and arts industries, frequent our airways, political figures, business entrepreneurs, just creative types in all walks of life have joined Artist First Radio, and we've been proud for the last 20 years to offer our services to communicate what you love the most. And so, H.J. Courtright, you're here because you support the arts, have quality materials, affordably priced. You're giving back, in a sense, to the literary artistic world and doing it in a fabulous way. 5-star reviews. You're going to love the book. Start out with Jennifer and work your way into the other genres of material that our guest writes. You won't be disappointed. Always illuminating, interesting. And I like the language that you've chosen also, Harold. It's very readable, not filled with vulgarity or simple sentences. You know, you have some complexity in your material. And thank you for making it readable. I'm thinking ages 15 and older can settle into the book if they have the right knowledge
actually,
of words.
I wrote this for an older age group. This is the other books I have. Arbalest, for one, is a young adult. And the others can also be read by young adult that age, but this is
yes.
Really for adults. It's if I were to rate it the same as a movie, I would probably say it's rated R.
Oh, I see. So the three books in the series, Ring of Fire, you would say then what, 18 and older?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, and those in the 30s and 40s and older will really tap into it.
I would say so, because they would probably understand, you know, well, with more life experience, you know, you're going to understand the characters better, you know, et cetera. So, yeah, anywhere from 18, 19 on up.
It's a 330-page book, okay? It's a serious endeavor.
Oh, yeah.
And so that requires a level of maturity that you don't see in young adults. So rated R. So, yeah, older group. I think that's awesome. And certainly all of our readers will love it because most of them, I think, are gray hairs, you know, after 20 years. Yeah, I've been listening for 20 years.
Well, so. this is quite different from other work that I've done, and I'm pleased with it. And I hope to get the other ones down pretty soon.
With the book, Jennifer, it being number 5 or 6 in the writing scheme, you found your voice, your methodology. Everything has come together with a voice of maturity and experience, perhaps, that wasn't there 5, 10 years ago.
Well, this is written a lot differently. This is more contemporary, actually.
Yeah.
And the other ones are, well... Yeah, I can see your point, but with Arbalest, the unicorn story, that was more medieval, and it was geared around young adult, and I didn't want it to sound too old English and too stuffy, so I toned it down in a manner that made it more poetic, and the dialogue as well, to get away from that old English stuffy stuff that nobody likes to read. So that has a different flow than this, for that reason. But like I say, I'm pleased with it. I'm making plans for the other two. I haven't put a whole lot down yet, but it's all in my head. It has to start there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, these things take time, you know, and planning and thinking through. Because at the end, you're going to have another book, you know. So you're really writing two while you're thinking of the foundational number one in that process. And it takes a lot of quality effort. And thank you for putting in the time. I'll tell you, it's a labor of love. You know, do you find your time slipping by 4 or 5 hours? And
yeah. There are times when I get home, I sit in front of the computer, and no sooner turn it on and get the keyboard lined up, and I doze off. You know, I have those days too. But as a rule, yeah, I'll work 2, 3, sometimes 4 hours at a time. Take a short break and come back to it to do an hour or so later on in the day. But yeah,
it's mental because it's not just laying out words or concepts or themes. It's actually, you know, creating a storyline, a dialogue between people, Jennifer and the pistol or whoever else happens to be in the room.
Yeah, yeah, and it's very daunting sometimes, you know, but. It's like anything else you love to do. You stick with it until it's done.
That's right. Now, I remind our listeners the names of the next two in the Ring of Fire series. So we have Jennifer, and then number two will be
Delilah.
And her connection to Jennifer?
Her connection to Jennifer, well, let's see. Her connection to Jennifer. She is Jennifer's sister. She is Jennifer's sister's lover. And she also has an affair with two other characters in the story.
She gets around. Okay. So
yeah.
So that's her role. She's really kind of in the family, or should be, in a way.
Right.
With Jennifer's brother. And then the final book, the third in the series...
The third is Desiree,
and she is the mother?
Right.
She's the mother of Jennifer.
She's Jennifer's mother, and it's really her story before these other ones actually take place. It's, say, 25 years ago. It's like a prequel.
Like a flashback.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
What put her together to make her... the way she is in this book, Jennifer, because she's not a very nice person, to say the least.
Well, it doesn't sound like Jennifer's brother's girlfriend is either.
No, it's not. It's not her brother. Her sister's.
Oh, her sister's a lesbian girlfriend.
Right.
And her name is Delilah.
Yeah.
Well, that's how appropriate.
Well, you know, I started working on this, and I came up with these names. I go, okay, these are good names, and they seem to fit the character and this and that. And I didn't realize until I'm knee-deep in this story that I have two characters. One of them is Sam, and the other one is Delilah. And I go, wow. Isn't that some kind of coincidence?
Yeah, Yes, exactly. Samuel and Delilah, the old biblical story, you know.
Where... So I just left it. I didn't change it.
Didn't change it. Why not? It worked. It's been working a long time.
it worked the first time. It should work now.
And absolutely. And it is amazing how these characters begin, once you define their role in the story, all of these other little details come tumbling in place.
Yeah, they do. Oddly enough, they do. And especially if you've given the character a name that really fits, and then all these other things just kind of fall in place. You know, it's really odd to think about it that way, but it does do that. You know, if all your characters are named properly, then a lot of their characteristics just fall right where they should be.
Yes, and Jennifer's sister's name is what is her name? Oh, Sam.
Liz.
That's right. Oh, Liz. Liz.
Yeah.
Perfectly. Perfect. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Just as you said, just fits together wonderfully. And that makes the storyline believable, you know. You really get into the story, you're gripped by it, you realize that these characters could actually exist. And sadly...
Yeah, that's the fun part.
Yeah, sadly, you might know people just like them. So...
Well, you know, part of my, like I said, part of my research for this was to observe people. So there may be little bits and pieces of 100 people in this story, you know, little idiosyncrasies here and there, you know, even in my own life, there's a few little things in there. Just you draw from so many things when you sit down and write.
So. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the great thing about writing. And as you stated earlier, Harold, these are activities you wouldn't engage in. You know, we have that conscience that says, no, you're not going to do that. And yet there seem to be people out there who function every day who don't have those boundaries for whatever reason, psychological, emotional, trauma, just a lack of humanity or respect for themselves. And they aren't faithful. They're untrustworthy and on lots of levels.
That's true. It's true.
And they can make your way. They make their way into your life sometimes through convoluted relationships.
Yeah, that's very true. So you try not to think of it, but as a writer, you sit down and you have to think of those things. You know, because you know you think of it, but now you have to put it down on paper. And sometimes that's the hard part, and other times it just comes out. But if it wasn't for those experiences, then fiction would be very dull.
Do you enjoy this particular genre? Would you, I don't know how to classify it. Is it crime, criminal activity? Is it psychological thriller? All the above?
It crosses several lines. Believe it or not, my original concept of this, what I wanted to do, I actually wanted to do erotic romance. And I sat down, I go, I don't even know where to start. So I went to the bookstore and went through the women's literature and pulled out an erotic romance. I sat down and I read it and I go, gee, women actually read this stuff. I was really surprised. So... You know the idiot books you can get. There's idiot books on Shakespeare, on Windows 10. They're a whole series of these books.
Sure.
Well, they actually have an idiot's book on writing erotic romance.
Amazing.
So I saw that and I go, well, this idiot bought it. Okay. So I get the thing home and I'm reading through it, and it tells you the do's and don'ts and so on and so forth, and what you can get away with, what you can't, so on. I said, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write a couple dozen things here, a couple dozen pages. And when I got done, I took an objective look at it and said, this is not for me. And I wound up giving the book away. So I had the original plot pretty much down, and I had to work on it, of course, but I got rid of the erotic part of it, and I just
well a little bit. Now you kept the sister who's a lesbian and her girlfriend.
Well,
you named a second book
bits,
after
yeah.
her. Come on,
but it doesn't get too deep, you might say, as what it would normally would in an erotic novel.
Well, we just said we'll call it rated R.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
So, Jennifer, what a wonderful project. How long? Now, because you recognized you had so much meat in the package, you wanted to split it off into two future books. How much time did you spend on putting this package together? Is it a year, 2 years? I mean,
from start to finish, probably about 7 years.
7 years.
But having said that, I didn't work on entirely those 7 years. I had some personal trauma, and during some of that time, my wife had passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I stopped writing entirely for a year or more.
Sure.
And I got back to it, put it on the shelf, and then I completed Arbalest, which was the other book that I had already started. And brought this one out again, started to work on it, got sidetracked again on another book, and came back to this. So the amount of time is, you know, perhaps 7 years or so, but if I were to put it all together and lump it together, it'd probably be about 2 years, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. That's right. I mean, and that's so common among authors. Life happens, you know. And
yeah, exactly.
Along the way, you're writing, or you get sidetracked. You know, I really have another topic I want to get to, or I want to finish up another project before I come back to it, you know.
Yeah, and I work on no less than two projects at a time. You know, because what happens is, well, you know, by writer's block, you get to a point and you go, oh, no, now what do I do?
Yeah.
So you say, okay, fine. Just gather up all these papers, put them off to the side, and let me work on this other thing for 6 months. And that'll exhaust itself. And I go, okay, now what do I want to do? Well, let me go back to this other book that I started. And then you look at that with just fresh eyes. It's almost like you've never seen it before. Yeah, obviously you know what's there, but you look at it and you go, oh, what? I made that mistake? What an idiot. You know, and then you start fixing things and things come back to you, you know, and you go, oh, wow, okay, I think I've got it now. And then you keep on working until that bleeds dry and then you know, switch back and forth. I do that quite a bit.
Now, when you're finished or when you think you're finished, do you have another proofreader, someone else, an editor that would look over it and say, hey, I found some more things?
I have probably the best editors in the world. I'm in no less than three critique groups.
How nice.
And yes.
So they're seeing it from lots of angles.
Right, exactly. And I also see their work. You know, we just take each of us takes a piece of the work in, and the rest of the group gets to tear it apart, and you go home and do what you have to do. And we each have our own projects that we work on, and we each have a say and so forth. And two, if for some reason you run out of ideas, it serves as a think tank. You know, maybe you could try this, or maybe you should do that. And you'd be surprised what kind of ideas you come up with. And it's like, why didn't I think of that? You know? And it works really well.
And, you know, isn't that the whole idea of being involved with others who are trying to write?
A writer's group? Absolutely. You help each other along the way.
Absolutely. And maybe they're writing different things. You know, there's newspaper articles that need to be written. There's magazine articles that need to be written. There's so many. There's short stories. There's different genres of writing. There's children's books, sci-fi, fiction, nonfiction, psychological thrillers. There's so many approaches to literature. And when you're in a group like this, you have that dynamic situation happening.
Yeah, and as hard as the work is sometimes, you just look forward to it.
Are you still calling New Jersey home then?
Yeah, for at least the next 8 months, maybe 10 months. By that time, I'll be retired and I'll move on to
not Florida.
Else. No, not Florida. No, not.
Good, yeah. Good. No,
I don't
just
like
kidding.
The weather down there. That's too much for me.
That's a lot of humidity.
Yeah, I was thinking someplace in the middle, maybe the Carolinas or something of that nature.
My brother and sister-in-law retired from Chicago and moved to Fort Myers, Florida, and they love it down there. But I'm worried now there's two hurricanes headed that direction.
Well, every season it's the same thing, you know.
Yes, and so you worry about that. Of course, here in the Northeast, we have snow. And where you live, audience, there's probably strange weather that lead you to want to read wonderful books like the one we're talking about on Authors First by H.J. Courtwright, the book Jennifer, and, of course, a library of books covering other topics available on Amazon.com from our author. And learn all the details by visiting his website, placed at artistfirst.com. Share this interview with everyone you know on your social network sites. Have a good time promoting a quality author. You won't be disappointed, and you'll have lots and lots to talk about. Where are we headed next? I know you're writing the other two in the sequel, putting that together. Are you thinking about the holiday season, traveling, getting out to see people? Or do you primarily utilize our types of services, interviews, and the internet as your way of reaching an audience?
Yeah, I usually use the internet and so forth.
Yeah,
I've done some book presentations at the library and that seems to help. And I'm a little bit more low key than others, I guess. And whether that's good or bad, I don't know, but I'm a little bit more low key.
I think it's great for authors to find their local library, local newspaper, radio station, and get involved in the community. It just lifts the ship when others know there's an author around.
Yeah, that helps. And what I have done, that you mentioned libraries, I haven't with this one yet because I just recently got the printed copies. But what I did with Arbalest was I went to all of the libraries in Morris County here in New Jersey where I live. And I was surprised. There's like 30-some libraries in Morris County alone. And I went to each one of them and donated a copy of my book. And
wonderful.
There's 18 of them in circulation right now.
That's great.
And I can go on the website and see if they've been lent out and so forth, and they've been lent out on various libraries. I said, wow, that's really cool. I like that. And the other thing I did was with Arbalest and with Jennifer, I submitted them as e-books to what's called the Biblio Board. And that's something that's just coming up now. Libraries across the country are being linked together through this Biblio Board, the way I understand it. And it's a way to borrow ebooks. And so my I'm working on getting my books into this too.
What a great idea.
Yeah, just for a greater readership.
Oh, absolutely. Convenience. That's what we need. You know, authors have to be out there with something everywhere so that it's at any given time someone interested in a psychological thriller or in the name or reading something that they say, oh, hey, I got to get that. I have to try it. And once they do, then they're hooked. You know, they're going to come back to Courtright and see what else they can find by the author.
Yeah.
It just happens every time. So congratulations on getting it out there. And a lot of the libraries will allow authors to come in and set up a table and offer their books. Or what about an app? Could you develop an app that you could give out instead of a book?
No, I haven't looked at anything like that yet.
Or what about a card or a piece of paper they could scan with like a barcode or with their phone, and that would take them right to the page, buy the book at a discount?
Interesting idea.
If everything's available, in other words, not by hard copy but by digital, then you could have a slide presentation where you would have the image of the book, a little bit about the book, talk about all the books. You know, so you could spend some time with your latest and then recap some of the earlier books and have a visual effect for an audience. You may have 50, 100 people come to your library just to learn and see you.
It's something to think about.
I know. And it's just a great chance to guerrilla market. And I like the idea of your local newspaper and radio also. You know, you have a library of material being recognized. Your books are available. You're a local celebrity. So get out there on the radio and have that article written. We can't wait to see more. Two more books coming in this series, the Ring of Fire book series. Kindle editions available, $3.99, available at Amazon.com. Get your copies right away. Buy 10, gift as many as you can. And I don't mind if you start with Jennifer, our author's latest book. Thank you, Harold, for being with us this hour. It's been our privilege to have you back on Authors First. Before I let you go, anyone out there on planet Earth you'd like to say hello to or closing remarks for our listeners?
Well, I just say hello to all the people in the groups that I'm a member of and my friends that, you know, I told everybody I could possibly think of that I'd be here tonight. And I want to thank them for their support. You know, they constantly asking me how I'm doing, what I'm doing, and so forth. And I know they're as interested as I am. And I really thank them for that.
And we want everyone to like you on Facebook.
Oh, absolutely.
You could use a few more friends, so get out there, audience. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you, I think, the next time, okay?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me.